The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 434. Neil Brower interviews Harvey Bullock, 2002, part 3. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at WeaversDepartmentStore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and check things out. The 2018 Andy Griffith Show wall calendar is now in stock over at Weavers. So go ahead and get you one. You can also get you a t-shirt. You better gird your loins, Buster. You got a fight on your hands with Barney on the front. Great looking t-shirt. Head over to WeaversDepartmentStore.com and order you something. It's $5 shipping per order. The more you order, the more you save. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you donations from listeners like you. Executive producer of episode number 343 is Larry Taylor. Larry Taylor, he's one of our patrons over at Patreon. I want to thank Larry and thank all our patrons for helping support the show and keep the show going. And thank you for being here as well. It's always great to be here in Mayberry with you. And folks, man, we have such a great show. The last two shows have been amazing. This one is right up there, right along with it. We're going to be hearing from Harvey Bullock. He was a writer of The Andy Griffith Show. He wrote 31 episodes of The Andy Griffith Show. If you hadn't heard the first two episodes, pause, unless you're watching this live, pause, and go back and watch and listen to, whichever you'd prefer, those episodes of the podcast. Now, I will apologize, as I've said in the past, Harvey did not want to hold the microphone up to his face, so it's a little hard to hear him. I've done all I can to try to make the audio as good as possible, but he was difficult to hear at times. So if you can't hear it good, it's worth rewinding and trying to listen again. If you're watching the video version of this podcast, it might help because you can kind of see his voice or see his mouth as he talks. So that might be helpful. Now, I will want to say that what he's going to talk about here right off the bat at the beginning of this podcast episode, he's going to make mention of things that happened in the first just a little bit. If you'll remember, in the first episode, he was talking about being there from North Carolina and had a friend that had driven by his old home place where he had grown up. And there was, you know, what was there? You know, what kind of monument had been made to him? And he asked his friend to stand up and tell him what he found, and it was a vacant lot. So that's just a reminder. If you haven't seen that episode or heard that episode, go back and listen. Now, stick around after Harvey Bullock's interview, because we've got more from Randy Turner you want to miss this week in Mayberry history as well. So friends, let's get this thing going, and I know you're going to enjoy it. So take it away, Neil and Harvey.
As a writer, who was your favorite Andy Griffith Show character?
Well, they all played the same.
By the way, Joe, you sure know nothing that vacant lot?
Who was your favorite Andy Griffith Show character as a writer?
Favorite character writer? Well, I guess we all have to say Barney was so much fun to write. Andy, Aaron tried to balance it so that we would have highlight the various members of the cast. One time there'd be an Aunt B story where she would be a little more involved, others. So they kept them all sharp, you know, they were very fair. But nobody wanted to write when Barney would go off for a week, you know, nobody wanted to write for that week. And it was Barney's on, get him. To make a writer look very good.
What was your perception of the friendship between Andy Taylor and Barney Fife? The love, the relationship they had. What was your perception of that?
Well, Andy just flip out when Barney would do a routine on him. He just could control himself. He'd laugh hysterically. He'd fall down. not all of them are nothing. It was so inventive. Well, as you know the character. And Andy appreciated it so much, he just couldn't get over it. And as I said before, they liked to do scene duets together, Church in the Wildwood, and some of those things you remember, which were memorable, and both very fine-tuned. So their relationship was ideal.
I think really a key to, as just a fan of the show, of what makes the Barney Fife character work is the fact that Barney realizes who he is. He can brag, he can be very boastful, but he really knows his limits.
Well, he's transparent.
Yeah.
He's vulnerable, but still we can see through him, he's trying to do right. But he puts up all this facade, you know, of being the ace sleuth and the ace everything going on.
And then the relationship between Andy and Barney, you know, there's real love there. And that Andy's always looking out for Barney.
There really was a genuine affection between the two. And you could sense it in the singing and just hanging together after they came off the set. And as I said, Don had a wonderful voice. He was perfectly tuned. Perfect as myself.
So. Let's see a scene now from The Cow Thief that is an excellent example of the wonderful, caring relationship between Andy and Barney.
Hello, Mayor. Sheriff, what is all this? Why have you pulled these men in off patrol?
Thought I might need a little help to catch a cow thief.
The cow thief's here?
Chances look pretty good.
Well, I'd be proud to know how you figured that out, Sheriff.
I thought you might, Mayor. This here's the way the prints line up, ain't it?
Yes, approximately.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be one set of prints missing.
I don't get you, Andy.
They're all here, Abel, Baker, and Charlie.
Where's the prints made by the cow?
The cow? The cow?
Yeah. Then again, maybe the cow's prints are here. Now, these two fellas here, they always seem to follow this fella. That right there might suggest something.
What?
Well, these prints could be made by three men. Then again, they could be made by a man and a cow.
A cow? Shoes on a cow?
That seemed to explain everything. And that man just could be Luke Jensen.
Sheriff Taylor, did you call these men away from their duty just to give them that harebrained idea?
Well, I figured they need some help. Luke knows that Fletch has got a prize cow out there, and I figure he'll come by tonight to help us up to it.
Well, then why aren't you out there waiting for him?
He's too smart for that. Luke or his dog would spot us for sure. We got to get him with the evidence. So I figured we'd wait in here and let him turn himself in. You see?
Sheriff, I am a patient man, but I've heard enough. I have heard enough. I am not going to permit the entire law force of Mayberry to sit around in somebody's parlor on some impossible theory while those crooks could be cleaning out every farm in the county. Come on, men. You coming?
No, I'm going to stay here.
Deputy Fife?
I'll go make us a pot of coffee.
Out to the car, and I got through remembering. Another time a few years back when another mayor of our town accused you of having a harebrained idea. Remember that? That was when you had the idea of making me your deputy.
Harvey, could you comment just a moment on Don Knotts' comic genius?
Everyone just watched it flipping over what his genius is. There's no any roles can be traveled to describe it. It's mystical, it's magical, and there's always the reason he comes up with something you don't expect. It's fun to write a script for him because he'll do things in those words you don't really expect him to do. And they're always right, the changes, which drives you crazy too. But he's a legend.
Let's see a wonderful example of Don Knotts at work. This is from the Great Filling Station Robbery. It's the epilogue where Barney is sweet-talking Juanita.
Sarah, get me the Bluebird Diner. Juanita? Barn. Hi. Yeah. I finished that poem. You want to hear it? You got something to hold on to? Okay. Juanita. Juanita. Lovely, dear Juanita. From your head down to your feet, there's nothing half so sweet as Juanita. Juanita. Lovely, dear Juanita. Oh, there are things of wonder of which men like to sing. There are pretty sunsets and birds upon the wing. But of the joys of nature, none truly can compare with Juanita. Juanita, she of beauty beyond compare. Juanita, Juanita, lovely dear Juanita.
From your head down to your feet, there is nothing half so sweet as beautiful Juanita. That's beautiful, Barn.
Anything else you want to say about that? Did it take you long to write that poem?
No, not really. It comes in. So it came out pretty well. It inspires you to do things like that. Pay off the beaten track a little bit. And it always adds to it more than you can believe. You're going to have me in tears in a minute.
Wonderful comic scene. Now, another scene that is a fan favorite is from The Big House. Barney's rules at the Rock. Let's see this thing.
Got some customers for you.
Good.
Plain clothesmen are coming over from Memphis to pick them up. Be here this afternoon or in the morning.
Fine.
I don't think they'll give you any trouble. They're pretty well bushed.
Bring them in.
All right, bring them in. Right over here.
Hey there, how are you?
Fraternize with the prisoners.
They're all yours, Sheriff.
That does it.
Not quite, Sheriff.
Barney.
Please, Andy.
Now, men, there are a few things we ought to get straightened out right at the start to avoid any grief later on. Now, here at the Rock, we have two basic rules. Memorize them so that you can say them in your sleep. The first rule is, obey all rules. Secondly, do not write on the walls, as it takes a lot of work to erase writing off of wall. How do we tell all men when these gates shut behind them? You're starting a new life. If you're wise, you'll begin rehabilitation.
Barney. Now, Barney, I got to go out and look for the two that's still loose. Now, promise me you'll stay away from the prisoners.
You got nothing to worry about.
Make Gomer stay away from them, too.
Jimmy, I told you the Mayberry Jail is going to be run as secure as a big house itself.
Harvey, any comments about writing that?
Well, what amuses me enormously is that here, that taken out of paraphrase, other example, somebody would be, you'll pass someone in the shopping cart and they'll be saying, obey all rules, rule number two, rule number three. It's become a catchword. That was kind of fun to watch it happen. It didn't intend to be that good way, but it had to be a very useful little phrase to use. So it goes, give back for some of the shows, put it in and take it back. I like working it, though. You might guess that.
It's a wonderful, wonderful comic scene. An episode that you wrote that took somewhat of a different direction, showing Andy somewhat involved and intrigued and vulnerable by a beautiful woman, was Prisoner of Love.
Well, I don't know whether you know the little the minor tempest in the teapot about that show. Some people found it was salacious a bit. It was too sexy. They had Susan Oliver come in as a goddess on the lam, and she's a gorgeous thing, and she was locked up, and they were, certainly Mayberry had a temptress. And in writing it, I didn't think there was any more parameters in regular shows. I didn't think it was certainly not lecherous because none of them were. But we thought that was just a valid premise that the pretty conniving girl is trying to get her way out of jail. But some people have found it objectionable, because they thought that was not the mood of the show. And, you know, all I can say, it didn't seem objectionable on the way into tape, and I didn't find it objectionable. But I do notice now, looking at some of the old shows, and I'm sure you all do it, so something, is the character smoking a cigarette. Now, every once in a while, Andy will, and it's jarring. The same thing on other shows, you know, you don't realize that you see it. The smoker is fairly good. When we wrote Return to Mayberry, we couldn't use the oldest character. We didn't want to use the oldest character because he was a town drunk and alcoholism was no longer very comic. Not like the families were grieving with it and problems, and we felt the town drunk is passe as a comedy vehicle. So we put him with an ice cream truck, you may remember, and that seemed to work pretty well. He was selling rum raisin ice cream, which is as close as it got to it. And so you do change with the times on that. But most of about the Oliver thing, the Prisoner of Love, I find nothing objectionable to it. How can you find anything objectionable to Susan Oliver?
Let's see this scene.
Can't take it enough.
I am entitled to be in there. I am drunk and disorderly. I am here on a legitimate 411. I'll call my attorney. He'll have me in there just like that.
Take you home.
Home to my wife? Oh, that's police brutality.
I'm sorry about this. Now, Otis, come out of the cell.
No, 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 no. My wife. No.
If you don't go home, I'm not going to let you.
My wife won't pay me.
Get the door, get the door, get the door.
I can't go home. Get out. Get out.
He's going to wake up the whole town.
Well, what else is going to have to take him home?
Well, they live so far.
Right, what's that for?
Well, I
call it.
Heads, no tails, down.
Heads.
12.
No. You ready? Go ahead. No! Well, I guess all the excitement's over with.
Why? It's kind of a kooky jail, but it's fun. I'm enjoying it.
Thank you.
Well, if there's not anything else you want.
But there is. I mean, well, if it ain't again regulations. I suppose it sounds silly, but do you think you could, well, maybe pull up a chair and talk with me a little?
Oh, sure. Sure. The shyest thing that ever lived. He just couldn't seem to get up the nerve to ask Tyler Lee Vernon to marry him. Till one Saturday night, out on her front porch swing, he turned to her, and he says, Tyler Lee, 16 years I've been sitting out here with you every Saturday night, weather permitting, and 16 years I've been walking you home from prayer meeting, and all that time I've been bringing you candy and flowers and stuff like that. Now, Tyler Lee, let me ask you now, ain't you beginning to smell a rat?
And they did get married.
Yeah. Live in a little yellow house two up in the corner.
Yes.
Hmm?
Thank you.
Well, what did I do?
That's what you didn't do. You didn't ask me why and how come I'm here. You've given me an evening in which the only one asking questions was myself. And that's very nice.
Well, I guess I better do the work.
Darn this thing!
What's the trouble?
It gets stuck all the time.
Well, here. Let me give you a hand. Doesn't seem to be stuck, doesn't it?
Oh, it's this one.
She was justly affected by the small-town faithfulness and niceness. And I think it was beginning to get into character, get breaking through, and that was an important thing. That she thought there was some hope out there because these were people she wasn't used to dealing with. Healing, helpful, friendly people who weren't trying to exploit her, not to encourage her. And it may have gone a little overboard with the director bringing up a close scene like that, but it just strengthened the feeling that she thought she had found something real, which is Pollyannish, I presume, but I think it was a story point. It was never that.
One of the characters that we haven't talked about as of yet is Floyd Lawson, the barber. We're going to see a scene now from Aunt Bee's Romance. And this is a classic Floyd scene, a fan favorite. So please, let's see the scene.
92.
It feels it.
I just looked at the thermometer over the door. You know what it is?
92.
92. Like an oven. It's hot? Oh, it is hot.
Well, as Mark Twain said, everybody complains about the weather, but nobody does anything about it.
He say that?
Mm-hmm.
I thought Calvin Coolidge said that.
No, Floyd. Calvin Coolidge didn't say that.
What'd Calvin Coolidge say?
I don't know.
Sure Mark Twain didn't get that in Calvin Coolidge?
No, boy. Mark Twain lived before Calvin Coolidge.
Oh, you know, he couldn't have got it from now. But it's hot.
What have we here? Well, howdy, Aunt B. Roger, out for a little stroll, are you?
Well, I had to do my shopping, and Roger offered to carry my packages. Wasn't that thoughtful?
Very nice.
Aye, pleasure.
Oh, Roger, I'd like you to meet Floyd Lawson. Floyd's Roger Hanover.
I'm glad to meet you.
Floyd runs a barbershop here in town.
Oh, clip joint, huh?
Pardon me?
Clip joint. You know, you're a barber and you clip, so clip joint. You get it?
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Hey, clip joint, barber. Oh, I see. Oh, hey, that's pretty good.
Well, anything special for dinner?
Oh, no, nothing special.
Well, then it'll be lamb chops.
Okay.
Come on, Roger.
Adios, man.
Okay.
That's goodbye in Spanish. Also carbolic acid. That's goodbye in any language.
What? Is he on the stage?
Oh, no, Floyd. He's just an old bull of Aunt B. He's staying with us a few days.
Nice fella. They'd make a good match. Anything serious?
Well, that's just what I'm wondering.
She couldn't go wrong with him. Oh, he's a wonderful fellow. You can see it. He has a sense of humor. You like him?
You want to know the truth, Floyd? I can't stand him.
You can?
No. He's always telling him stale jokes. Talks all the time. He just gets on my nerves.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. He's a pushy sort of a fellow.
Very pushy. Well, it's too hot to get worked up about him.
Right. It's too hot. 92. Everybody complains about the weather, but nobody does anything about it. You know who said that? Calvin Coolidge.
When I was working on the book with Harvey Mayberry 101, he would answer my questions faithfully. Once in a while, he would send me an answer that I knew was special. And it didn't necessarily, I couldn't work it into a certain episode. It was just a general, beautiful comment that I felt that I wanted to include in the book. And one of these was a response to a question that I asked Harvey. What was Howard McNair like? And I don't think Harvey could put it any better than what he wrote it. And I asked him if he would read the response that he wrote to that question. So this is Harvey Bullitt talking about Howard McNair.
I never met Howard McNair. Writers seldom visited the shooting set. We just plain one-needed. We had already done our part, the rewrite completed, and slid under the producer's door. Any small fix-ups could easily be done by the director. The economics would not let us writers indulge in hanging around too long. We had to be constantly beating the bushes, trying to sell other stories. So I never met Howard McNair, but we share a very special mutual friend, a fey and wispy, wide-eyed barber of Mayberry, Floyd Lawson. Howard Floyd was a true artist. His signature oohs and ahs, lentish lines and whimsical touch, which defies analysis. He would suddenly switch from sing-song into an unconvincing stern authority, then a whisper of amazement. All the time wheezing, gasping, and rolling his eyes, all of which busied him so that he never got to finish his sentence. It was all very funny, and the viewers never thought he was acting. When we wrote for Floyd, we couldn't wait until that episode was shown to see how he had immeasurably improved the dialogue of his stop-and-go delivery. His breathlessness, his awe, and his pained disapproval of things. The Tags cast members were very close to Howard. When his health worsened, you could sense a palpable sadness on the set. Scenes were restaged so that he could do his lines seated on the chair, the barber chair. And he did them as fresh and funny as ever. When the end came, he was mourned on every sound stage in Hollywood where he had done his quaint, wondrous wizardry. Yes, I sure wish I had met Howard, but at least I know Floyd. And now, up in that great barbershop in the sky, Perhaps you'll finally be speaking complete sentences. No, I hope not.
Harvey, what does it mean to you to have your work remembered, loved, and celebrated by the Andy Griffith Show fans? What does that mean to you?
Fans?
To have the love, to have your work loved and appreciated and remembered celebrated.
I'm totally amazed at the longitude and latitude and length and healthiness of these shows we put on 40 years ago. Now, you people have been such good keepers of the flame. And they kept us alive and kept us going and rolling and with the same verve and fervor that we're rolling. We never for a minute thought that they would have that longevity. And it's a source of great amazement and tremendous pleasure that I see readings like this, meetings like this, meetings like Mayberry Days, where you're showing the longevity of it and endorsing the values of this show. And we didn't do any sermonizing, hope not to do any preaching. But we just represented an hour and a time being that we was lost for the time. But they come back, and if it does come back, it'll be riding on the heels of people like you.
Oh, wow. I tell you, folks, if you couldn't hear that good, go back and try to listen again. Great. Can you imagine? He's the one who wrote those 92. Yeah, you see what he said? 92. Oh, he's hot. That is just bringing Floyd Lawson to life was Howard McNear, but giving him his heart, his words, his background, all that. Harvey Bullock had such a huge part of that. And not just that, you heard him say early in the story there, where he's talking about Don Knotts. If you don't remember, Don had it written into his contract that he would have so many episodes, weeks off during the year, because being Barney, Don was a very kind of an introverted person. And so doing the Barney Five character made him tired. So he needed time to recover throughout the season so that he could give the performance he wanted to give. And you heard Harvey say that, you know, people would try to avoid writing scripts the week that Don was not going to be available. Barney was not going to be in the episode, so they didn't want to write that. Well, they'll wait and do one with Don in it, because Don was that kind of a talent. Then he's talking about Howard McNear and they couldn't wait to write dialogue with Floyd and then watch the episode when it came out to see how Howard McNear had turned that dialogue into something even more amazing than what they had written. And I have to tell you, I've seen that. I've read the scripts. I've looked at the scripts of the words. And while the words are the same, it's the delivery, it's the actor that made those words so alive. Now, not taken away from Harvey and the writers of the show, they were amazing, but those actors as well. I just can't imagine being part of that and being the one who actually wrote the words, you know, that Barney would say, and that he would be a part of that. It's just, wow, amazing. All right, guys. So we have got a little bit more for you here from Randy Turner over at the Gomer and Goober Pile. Oh, man, that is so hard to say. The Gomer and Goober Pile Comic Book Literary Guild. Oh my goodness. I never get that right. So let's head over and hear from Randy. Let's go.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Goober and Gomer Pile Comic Book Literary the Gomer and Goober Pile Comic Book Literary Guild for the Mayberry Historical Society. Alan, it is hard to say.
Composer Earl Hagen was born on July the 9th, 1919. He learned to play trombone in junior high and later graduated from Hollywood High School shortly before his 16th birthday. Within weeks, he had left home and was on the road touring as a trombonist with traveling big bands, eventually playing with such well-known band leaders as Tommy Dorsey and Benny Goodman. In 1941, tired of the life of a traveling musician, he accepted an offer to join the CBS Orchestra as a staff musician. In 1942, Earl knew he was likely to eventually be drafted. He approached a unit of the Army Air Corps in California called the Radio Production Unit that worked with soldier recruitment and told them he could not only play trombone, but could arrange music. They asked him to prepare a demonstration arrangement for the unit's 65-piece orchestra. Earl later recalled, "Having never written for anything but a dance band, I was overwhelmed by the sound of that orchestra." He said it was utopia and promptly enlisted. After World War II ended in 1945, Earl was an orchestrator and arranger for 20th Century Fox, a position he held for 7 years. He worked on many films, such as Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and Carousel. In 1952, he and a writing partner, Herbert W. Spencer, left 20th Century Fox and began scoring for television, including Make Room for Daddy, the show later known as The Danny Thomas Show, from which The Andy Griffith Show was spun off. It was there that Earl met Sheldon Leonard, who was brought in to direct. They ended up working together over 17 years on hundreds of shows and formed a close friendship. As their wives also hit it off, they traveled abroad extensively as a foursome for many years. Earl and Sheldon's work together included Gomer Pyle USMC, The Dick Van Dyke Show, That Girl, and The Mod Squad. From an orchestral perspective, the pinnacle was their ambitious work on I Spy, for which Earl won an Emmy in 1968. Because every episode was set in a different part of the world, Earl created a new soundtrack for every episode, often incorporating world music from the filming locales. But to Mayberry fans, and even those who are not, his best-known work was one of his simplest, and is one that has attained the level of Americana. When it was time to create the theme for Andy's new show, Earl said, "Sitting at home and racking my brain for an idea for a theme for the Griffith Show, it finally occurred to me that it should be something simple, something you could whistle. With that in mind, it took me about an hour to write the Andy Griffith theme." He then booked a studio to cut a demo literally that same night and got his bass player, a guitarist, and drummer there. He added, "I scribbled out a piano part and went in to record the theme." Earl provided the whistling himself. When he later played it for producer and story consultant Aaron Rubin, Aaron said he was anxious to hear it with the full orchestra. Earl convinced him it was already the way it should be, and the demo recording became the theme. By the way, people often mistakenly think the real title of the theme is The Fishin' Hole, but that version of the song with lyrics by actor Everett Sloan was done for an album Andy recorded the following year, in 1961. And one last note of interest, when Earl composed the theme for the Andy Griffith Show, he and Herb Spencer were still officially writing partners and had worked together on the show's pilot. So when Earl created and recorded the theme in one night, he still listed Herb as a co-composer when he filed the copyright, even though he has stated he didn't think Herb ever heard the theme until he actually watched the show on the air. That's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
Wow. Thank you so much, Randy. Earl Hagen, amazing. His music added so much to the Andy Griffith Show and so many other classic television shows that we've all enjoyed. If you enjoy This Week in Mayberry History, you can head over to the Gomer and Goober Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild, and you can see a daily dose of Mayberry history right there. And if you can't do that, or you want to make sure you don't miss one, you can send an email to turnersgrade@gmail.com, and Randy will make sure that you get a daily dose of Mayberry history. Friends, it is always a pleasure to be with you here in Mayberry. Again, I want to apologize a little bit for the sound quality, but it was as good as we can get. If anybody has better sound quality, let me know. But I want to thank Neil and Pat Coleman for the video that this audio is pulled from. I want to thank them for that. And that, hey, I am just extremely happy to have this audio and video. So I'm not knocking Neil at all. I appreciate him taking the time to produce this for us so we can share it, or I can share it with you guys. Friends, I want to thank all our patrons. If you've listened this far and you'd like to help continue and help this show keep going, please head over to Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/twochairs. And you can be a supporter of Two Chairs, No Waiting. Now, I should tell you, since you're sticking around this long, it's 40 minutes into the show, I want to thank all of our patrons for that. You can limit. The way I produce the shows, you pay per episode. So you can donate $1 an episode for every episode I produce, $2, $3, $1, whatever you'd like to do. You can also put a monthly limit, so you wouldn't be charged more than $2 or $3 a month. So if you're worried I'll start sticking out a lot of episodes, you can keep that from happening. Folks, I want to thank you for supporting the show if you're able to. And I also want to thank you for being here. Being here helps support the show too. Spread the word. Get out there and tell people. Let them know about Two Chairs No Waiting and the Andy Griffith stuff. It's all over the internet so they can have fun too. I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-684-8415. You can email me at floyd@imayberry.com or head over to twochairsnowaiting.com and leave a message there. Again, thanks to all the supporters. Thank you for sticking with me through this long episode. We have just a little bit left from Earl Hagen for next week, and maybe I'll have some feedback from some of you guys that we can play, so send it to me. Friends, thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time right here on Two Chairs. Good night, everybody.